Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, Florida got a new top public health official this week. The governor nominated Dr. Joseph Latipo as the state's new Surgeon General.
He comes to Florida with really a superb background, bringing superb intellect, but also I think will bring great leadership.
Latipo takes over as the COVID-19 infection rate in Florida remains above 10%. Hospitalizations and new cases are falling from recent highs, and about two-thirds of adults in Florida are vaccinated. He taught at UCLA's medical school. He's also questioned the effectiveness of wearing masks and promoted untested COVID-19 treatments. On Tuesday, he said he believes getting a vaccine should be an individual choice.
It's been treated almost like a religion, and it's just senseless, right? There are lots of good pathways to health, and vaccination is not the only one. We support measures for good health. That's vaccination, losing weight, it's exercising more, it's eating more fruits and vegetables.
We invited Dr. Latipo to join the program today here on the Florida Roundup, but we did not hear back from the Department of Health. Meanwhile, doctors at hospitals across the state for many months now have been urging Florida residents to get vaccinated to avoid serious illness and death. Here's more news for you. Just one day into his tenure as the state's top public health official, Latipo signed a new order from the Department of Health upending some public school quarantine policies that have been in effect. The new policy says public schools cannot require some students who've been exposed to coronavirus to be quarantined. Now, typically, if a child has been exposed and the school notifies the parents, that child is expected to quarantine for several days. But Dr. Latipo says parents should decide if their child should stay home or not. The CDC does say infected people can spread the virus up to 2 days before they show any symptoms.
Lots to talk about here with this story. Florida's last Surgeon General, after all, was really out of the spotlight for most of this pandemic. So what would you like to hear from Florida's new public health boss during this pandemic? How could the new leader affect how the state has responded to the virus? He's been nominated for the post but not confirmed by the Senate, so how can he take action? What role will he have in decisions, including decisions over masks and vaccines? 305-995-1800. Our phone lines open live across the state on this Friday, 305-995-1800. You can also send us your thoughts on Twitter. Look for us at Florida Roundup.
Mary Ellen Claus is Capitol Bureau Chief at the Miami Herald. She's been covering Dr. Latipo's appointment, joins us now. Mary Ellen, lots of discussion about Dr. Latipo, in particular that he signed a document called the Great Barrington Declaration. This has been denounced by public health experts. The declaration essentially calls for only vaccinating seniors and the immunocompromised and essentially letting the virus run its course through the rest of the population. Can you tell us more about Dr. Latipo's views and some of these other indications he's made as to where he stands in fighting the pandemic?
Hi, well, thanks for having me on. Dr. Latipo has been quite an outspoken advocate of some of these proposals by the Great Barrington Declaration. The primary idea behind that, as you mentioned, is that they advocate for a policy that says anyone who's not vulnerable should be allowed to resume life as normal. And he has been a vocal critic of any vaccine mandate and mask mandates. He at one point last year joined with other doctors in advocating for some of these alternative medicines like hydroxychloroquine. He's written a couple of op-eds in newspapers. He did. He wrote something in USA Today last year. That basically indicated that shutdowns are a very bad idea and it would not stop the spread of the virus. So he has been, along with many of the advisors Governor DeSantis has chosen, pretty much on the outlier of the public health and medical community. So the governor clearly chose someone who is aligned with the views the governor has been embracing.
Yeah, you mentioned his embrace of hydroxychloroquine. Dr. LaDapa was actually featured in a video last year that was deleted, removed from social media platforms for spreading misinformation about COVID-19. This group he spoke with, America's Frontline Doctors, one of the founders of that group was arrested during the deadly January 6th uprising at the U.S. Capitol. You've called Dr. LaDapa's views as on the fringe of medical consensus about combating the virus. How do these revelations that we are learning, how do they impact his credibility as the state's top doctor?
Well, it's a remarkable time because rather than finding a middle ground, the governor has really been leaning in to this point of view on public health, and in many ways, he has politicized this crisis in by really, I think, exacerbating the divisions. There are people that are close to the Department of Health that are sort of keeping their head low and not trying to upend the general consensus. My question is, how many of those people will stay under Dr. LaDapa? Or are we going to see some of these public health experts decide they can no longer stay there? It's an interesting time. In many ways, we've watched as the governor has taken a point of view really promoting treatment through monoclonal antibodies. At the same time, his Department of Health has been quietly promoting vaccines. The question is, will those two strategies continue under Dr. LaDapa, or will that change? So we'll be watching. And when it comes to the credibility, we'll see how he acts.
In the meantime, he has already acted. Let me ask you about this move by Dr. LaDapa this week. He has not yet been confirmed, we should note, but he has already issued a new rule that would essentially let parents decide whether to quarantine their children from school if they've been exposed to COVID-19. Before this, kids were told to quarantine for 4 days if they were exposed to a positive student or staffer. So what's the reaction potentially from school districts to this? They are already, many of them, defying the governor on mass mandates. Could they do the same when it comes to quarantine protocol?
It appears as though school districts are taking a very different, varied approaches to this. The very first immediate effect of this rule is it brought to a halt an administrative hearing on the complaint that school districts had led challenging the state's ban on mask mandates. So it effectively put an end to that, but it's also raise some questions within school communities about, can they counter the governor's new mandate? And so we've watched as some school districts like Hillsborough and Palm Beach have immediately said, well, we're going to have to follow the governor's orders, and it's up to parents to decide whether their children needs to be quarantined. Other districts like Miami-Dade and Pinellas and a couple others that have said, we're going to continue, and Alachua is another one, we're going to continue to keep in place our existing policies. And so that means that there's likely to be another conflict ensuing.
Mary Ellen, stick with us. We want to hear from some listeners and callers. 305-995-1800. 305-995-1800. Speaking with Mary Ellen Kloss, the bureau chief of the Miami Herald in Tallahassee, about Governor Ron DeSantis' choice for the Surgeon General, making his nomination known this week. Brett in Jacksonville, you are up on line two. Brett, thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you very much. As a longtime Republican, you know, I know that the party's has advocated for more local control in a lot of political matters. And so I'm confused by Governor DeSantis imposing a top-down kind of mandate as it comes to this and fighting local school districts. And I don't know if I have a question, but I guess the question is, I'm not sure why he does that.
Sure.
Any ideas?
Yeah, the observation there, Brett. Mary Ellen, getting to a very traditional Republican position of smaller government, but Brett noticing, as many folks have, about how the governor and his administration has been inserting itself into local decisions, particularly when it comes to this pandemic. And I suppose the question relates to the new Surgeon General choice is how, you know, in the early days here, even just as a nomination without Senate confirmation, how much can the Surgeon General influence policy, and how much position can he take regarding regulations without the official Senate confirmation?
Well, he is an interim appointment, and interim appointments are allowed to move forward with proposed rules and so forth. When it comes to the listener's question or observation, mm-hmm. It has been something that is kind of a paradox here. I've been on this program talking to you about the legislature and this governor's approach to local preemption, which is basically saying that the state knows better than local governments on many issues. And it's clear that he is taking the Republican Party a different direction. And he's relatively consistent when it comes to things that are important to him. The local preemption issue, for example, you know, on other things, there's a lack of consistency, I just have to say.
Gotcha. Another phone call here from South Florida. Let's see. It's line four, Elise in Miami Gardens. Thanks for calling, Elise. You're on the radio.
Hi. Thanks for having me. Just a rhetorical question for this new doctor. What does he believe that diet, exercise, eating more fruits and vegetables can prevent or treat other illnesses that have been contained by vaccinations, such as mumps, measles, polio, et cetera, or does he think that we don't need those anymore? And what is his position on the vaccinations that are required for children before they enter public schools? Mm-hmm. Does he think those should be done away with as well?
Elise, great questions that I imagine Melissa and Mary Ellen are going to be front and center during confirmation hearings, at least coming up in the following months.
Particularly, Mary Ellen, since another Republican in Tallahassee, Manny Diaz, who does have oversight over health care in this state, he raised a lot of eyebrows this week when he said it was time to review whether we even need to vaccinate children entering school for diseases, as the caller said, like polio, mumps, measles, rubella, whooping cough. Extraordinary.
I have to say, I'm not surprised that this issue is now being raised, because the governor's opposition to vaccines for public school kids is so contrary to the history of vaccinations in Florida and across the country. It's been established that the way we have kept mumps and rubella and measles and now chickenpox from just shutting schools down and renewing as a contagious pandemic is because we've allowed and mandated these vaccines for any child to enter any school. And there are exceptions, there are religious exceptions, but they're very rarely employed. And so the state is now basically pursuing it's contradicting its own policy. And so it doesn't surprise me that they are going to have to raise this and tackle it.
Mary Ellen, back to the Surgeon General particularly, this role with the soon-to-be former Surgeon General, Scott Rifkes, had been minimized during this pandemic by the governor and even the governor's staff. There was an early news conference back in the spring of 2020 where the Surgeon General was publicly speaking, and one of the communication leaders of the governor's staff came over and escorted him in a friendly way away from the microphone. What kind of public presence can we expect from this nominee as Surgeon General from Governor DeSantis?
I think Dr. Latipo has already indicated that he is very comfortable having a very high profile role. And I think that's exactly why he was chosen. One of the primary reasons why he was chosen. It's also in addition to the fact that he's very aligned with the governor's views on these issues. Scott Rivkes was someone that was inherited from the previous administration under Rick Scott. And so Ron DeSantis didn't necessarily know how loyal he would be. It's very clear that some of his positions early on didn't exactly fall in line with the kind of messaging that the then Trump administration was indicating. And so I think he was quietly just pushed aside and kind of kept out of the limelight. Governor DeSantis echoed, obviously, much of what President Trump was saying at the time.
Lots of tweets coming into the show. Here's one. Latipo was not hired for medical expertise. He was picked to give a thin veneer of legitimacy to the state's COVID strategy. Mike in Sarasota on the line. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks. Thanks for calling.
Good, thank you. A quick question. Back in...
We lost you there, Mike. Go ahead.
They had... it was prior to symptoms. We're considered probably the area that is most... you are most contagious. So I'm wondering if that can be kind of brought to light, if that's still the case.
Right. The quarantine policy, Mary Ellen Kloss, quickly before we have to let you go. You can be positive for a couple of days before showing symptoms, which was the rationale for quarantining in part, correct?
Yes, it's my understanding from all the experts we've spoken to that one of the biggest causes of the COVID spread, especially under the Delta variant, is asymptomatic spread, where people have it, don't realize they have it, and they spread it. And that is exactly the reason why quarantine, especially among young children whose symptoms have been mild, has been a very important policy.
Well, we'll have to continue to follow this because, as you pointed out a moment ago, districts are varying in their response to this new directive from the state's controversial new Surgeon General nominee. Mary Ellen Kloss with the Miami Herald, always providing great insights to this extraordinary state we live in. Thanks for being with us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And calls and tweets continue to come into the show. What do you think about the state's COVID response and the appointment of this new Surgeon General? Get on the line now. It's 305-995-1800. And follow along on Twitter. Follow us and tweet us at Florida Roundup. This discussion continues right after the break here on Florida Public Radio. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for listening to Public Radio and spending time with us Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. We're talking about this week's nomination by Governor Ron DeSantis of a new Surgeon General in Florida. This Surgeon General coming from Southern California to Florida. He has written opinion pieces questioning the effectiveness of masks and has been against vaccine mandates. 305-995-1800 is the phone number in Jacksonville. Mo has been patient on line 10. Mo, thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you very much. I just wanted to say I think it's real refreshing and strong leadership and necessary for us to have people in these decision-making positions who are raising questions mm-hmm. and who are trying to get us back to as normal a life as possible and get away from the fear-based decision-making. And it's a little disappointing to kind of hear the stigmatization, if you will, or the angle that so many people in the media take that, you know, they instantly try to, you know, demagogue or call out people or almost act as if it's wrong to question and to have a different approach.
Mm-hmm.
And that they're somehow doing, that the leaders are doing something wrong by wanting to look at things differently.
Yeah, I suppose the question becomes, Mo, is are you questioning verified empirical science or are you questioning the policies that have been drawn from that empiricism?
Well, I mean, there's just so little empirical science regarding this, right? I mean, there's so many of these issues.
Is there really so little science, Mo, you think?
In what regard?
Well, you tell me. You said there was so little science. What?
Well, obviously, there's little science to the long-term effects of the vaccine.
Sure.
So, and it's not fair to say that DeSantis has been anti-vaccine. He was one of the first guys to promote the vaccine, right? So he's one of the first guys to promote the vaccine, but because he's anti-mandate, he's characterized as anti-vaccine.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I appreciate that feedback, Mo. I'm not sure. Go ahead.
One more thing. And you know, just because now some people are going to say, well, why don't we pull back the veil? Let's look at all vaccines. Let's question how necessary are other vaccines. That's not to say people are anti-vax or don't think that we should be vaccinating children, but maybe this is a good opportunity to see, can the vax process be improved upon? There's nothing wrong with that.
Hmm. All right. There's well, Mo, I appreciate you listening. And glad to hear those comments there. Mo in Jacksonville joining us here on the Florida Roundup.
We're getting no shortage of comments, both digitally and on the phone lines. Here's a tweet. Eat more fruits and vegetables. Don't be fat. Then you won't get COVID. But if you do, we'll give you a very expensive monoclonal antibody treatment. Who needs vaccinations or masks? A cynical take from a listener on Twitter to the appointment of the new Surgeon General. Dahlia in Coral Springs. Dahlia, you're on the air.
Hi. My question is that it's all based around freedom. In 1918 and during World War II, children were wearing masks in order not to spread it. I don't understand why this is an issue. It's common sense. It's basic common sense. When you're a surgeon in the hospital, you don't want to catch anything. You wear a mask. The children survived during World War II wearing gas masks. I'm having such a hard time that he can actually take the time to take away the freedom of the schools to sue them if they mandate masking in the schools. Luckily, I work in a private school, so we have to follow the rules, our own
of your school, yeah. And as a teacher, Dahlia, I appreciate you sharing that. We've heard from so many teachers about this, and I want to thank you so much for that call. That's Dahlia in Coral Springs. As we've been talking about COVID-19 here on the show.
This week, a Republican lawmaker filed a Texas-style anti-abortion law in the Florida House. This bill would ban abortions in the state after about 6 weeks. Like the Texas law, it has what's known as a bounty provision. In other words, it relies on residents to sue doctors or anyone who assists with an abortion after what supporters call a fetal heartbeat is detected.
Reproductive health experts say the bill's name is misleading because an embryo at 6 weeks gestation does not yet have a functional heart or a heartbeat. Representative Webster Barnaby of the Space Coast did not answer questions about his abortion proposal on Wednesday.
No comments at this time. Thank you.
Now, we invited Barnaby to join this show today. He did not respond to our request. We also contacted five other Florida Republican lawmakers, asking them for a live or recorded interview. One declined. We didn't hear back from the other four. But we want to hear from all of you. What are your questions and comments about a new abortion proposal for Florida? What legal questions, health issues does this bring forth? Are you in support or opposed? Your calls in a moment. 305-995-1800. Tweet the show at Florida Roundup.
Florida Democrats are promising to push hard against the bill. We spoke with Broward County Senator and Democratic Minority Leader Lauren Book. Senator Book, welcome to Florida Public Radio. You've called the Texas abortion law an assault on women's rights. Is there any portion of the Florida proposal that you can support?
Thank you so much for having me. Absolutely not. To be quite clear, the women's fears have been realized with the filing of this extreme anti-abortion bill in the Florida House. Unfortunately, this bill reads identically to the dangerous and draconian bill that came out in Texas. It's got all of the parts that the terrible Texas bill had: vigilante justice, language rooted in rhetoric instead of science, and cruelty with no exemption for rape and incest. It is clearly a control mechanism and an affront on and every woman's individual right and freedom. There is not one piece of this bill that is anything that anybody should find acceptable in today's modern society.
Similar to the Texas legislation, the Florida proposal would have citizens enforce the abortion regulations. Conceptually, Senator, do citizens have the ability in Florida to enforce state regulations?
Well, again, it brings up a civil action. You know, we call it financial vigilante justice. It's actually in Section 8 of the House bill, and it creates basically a legion of bounty hunters to go after up to the point of harassing young women and girls seeking healthcare treatments. That's what it is. It incentivizes harassing or even stalking minors to find if abortions were provided, combined with the Florida consent law, parental consent law that we've already passed. It gives out basically a $30,000 payout. Mm-hmm. If you think about that, state government officially basically deputizing citizens, bounty hunters at random in the public to violate a woman's privacy right and haul them into a court for monetary reward. It is unconscionable, what this House bill contemplates, quite frankly.
Current law does not allow states to ban abortions before viability, which is usually understood to be 22 to 24 weeks of a pregnancy. This proposal in Florida bans the state from enforcing the regulation. In fact, this proposal says, quote, enforcement of the requirements of this in response to violations may not be taken or threatened by the state. Does that pass constitutional muster?
I don't know that it does. But what I think we need to focus on, again, is that this 6-week mark really is no one knows that they're pregnant. So basically, let's call this what this is: an all out ban on abortion. This would be an all out ban on abortion in Florida, completely and totally taking away a woman's right to choose what happens to her body. We know that 1 in 4 women will seek an abortion at some point in time in her life. And the reason for that abortion is completely and totally up to that woman. It is not up to the state or anyone else to decide what is right for a woman and how she makes those decisions for her body. I will also point out that makes this bill even more appalling is there is no exemption for rape and incest, which as a survivor of sexual assault is completely and totally cruel and unusual punishment for the women in the state of Florida.
Earlier this month, you told CBS4 in Miami, quote, "We're going to fight and bring every bit of arsenal we have at our disposal to fight this bill." Now, until September 10th, you were the chair of the Senate Committee on Children, Families, and Elder Affairs. That committee is expected to at least be one of the committees to consider any abortion proposal in the Senate. You held that position for 3 years, but the Senate President, Republican Wilbur Simpson, replaced you with a South Florida Republican. The Senate President said it was because of challenges in holding multiple leadership positions. You're the Democratic minority leader in the Senate. Does the fact that you have been removed from the chair position in this committee present political challenges in terms of considerations of any abortion legislation that may come to the Florida Senate?
Well, I think that this bill obviously has not dropped a companion to this bill has not dropped in the Florida Senate yet. So, don't know where that bill would go or where it would be referenced. I certainly think that my ability to fight against and my caucus's ability to fight against a piece of legislation or work to change a product is not stopped because I'm not a chair of a committee. I do believe that we've had many conversations with Senate leadership, with the president, with the president designate in Kathleen Passidomo. And I believe that the product that the Florida Senate at least drops will be very different than the bill that you're looking at today in this House bill. Does that mean that we're going to that we're not going to fight against a ban truly on abortion or limiting a woman's right to choose? Certainly we are going to fight vociferously for that. But I do believe that the product that the Senate will put out will be very different. We're a more deliberative body. And you've already seen, you know, signals from the president designate, that that is not the extreme position that the Senate is going to take. And so I hope that we're going to continue to be able to work to create, to craft a product. But again, at the end of the day, it is not something that that we support or we won't fight against very, very voraciously to make sure that women can maintain a right to choose what happens to her body and in her life.
This legislation will be considered in the spring of an election year. How do you think any new abortion law or proposed legislation for Florida would impact the 2022 election cycle?
You know, I think this is a really extreme piece of legislation. What I would say is we have heard not just from thousands and thousands of Floridians, men, women, young, old, that this is not something that they want to have or see have in their state. But I mean, Republicans, independents, this is a very, very extreme look at a piece of policy and a piece of, you know, fundamental principle and values. So I'm sort of kind of surprised, because usually when we're going into an election year, people don't want to go too crazy into the controversy, but they've clearly waded into it. And so, you know, I look forward to fighting again to protect a woman's right to have autonomy over her body and decide what happens in her life. But I think that you've heard and you've seen people from all over the country, all over the world talk about how extreme a bill like this is. When you're talking about taking away a young girl, let's say she's 15 years old and being sexually assaulted by her father, her uncle, her brother, and the state forcing that child to have a child, that is insane. That is cruel and unusual punishment. And as a survivor, 30. The fact that a piece of legislation in the Florida House that has dropped that has something like that in it, I know that and I believe and I am hopeful that my colleagues will find it that is not something that we can choose to do in the state of Florida. But again, in election time, it's people get a little wild and willy.
Senator Lauren Book is from Broward County. She's also the Democratic minority leader of the Florida State Senate. Senator Book, thanks for your time.
Thank you so much.
You are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio.
Lots of tweets coming into the show. Barbara says, this is an outright attack on women, period. We will never go back. Zach tweets the show, I think it's wrong that it's a man filing this bill. Who is he to control what women can or cannot choose to do with their bodies? Your calls in a few moments, 305-995-1800. Courtney Cahill joins us now. She's a professor at Florida State University College of Law. Dr. Cahill, it's good to have you on the show.
Oh, great to be here. Thank you so much.
You know, the Justice Department has already sued Texas over its abortion law, saying that it's denying women in that state their constitutionally guaranteed right to an abortion. We heard Senator Book say she's not sure the Florida Senate might even introduce a companion bill to this. But what can we glean from the federal action against Texas and how that might impact how things play out here in Florida?
So I think, you know, obviously if the Supreme Court, right, were finally, you know, if the case eventually landed in the Supreme Court somehow before the Supreme Court decides the big abortion case currently before it, which is a Mississippi case, and the court says these kinds of private enforcement heartbeat bills are unconstitutional, then that would clearly, you know, be dispositive on the question, right? Florida couldn't do what it's doing. You know, the DOJ just filed its brief, and the federal action that's going on in Texas, you know, we'll have to kind of see how it makes itself, you know, how it kind of winds itself through the federal courts there. Before, sure.
What about the bounty provision, as it's known, of this bill, allowing members of the public to sue anyone who helps end a pregnancy? Physicians would be fined $10,000 for each abortion they perform. Critics say this creates an incentive for Florida residents to essentially spy on each other. Recent polling around this issue shows that even those who oppose abortion don't like this aspect of these kinds of measures. Your thoughts?
So it's not just, I think it's important to note, it's not just folks in Florida who have standing to sue anyone who induces or aids and abets an abortion after cardiac activity is detected. It's anyone, right? So the law gives anyone, regardless of whether or not they live in Florida or live in Florida, standing to sue in state court. Yeah, I mean, it's not completely unheard of, right? So states can share enforcement of laws with private citizens. So in that sense, there are these private citizen actions that supplement state enforcement of laws. These heartbeat bills obviously go a huge step further, right? They're not supplementing state enforcement, they're supplanting state enforcement of law. So in that sense, that is novel and unprecedented and complete, you know, and unique in our legal system.
Right. Essentially deputizing citizens to take on the power of the state. We're speaking now with Professor Courtney Cahill. She's a professor at FSU College of Law. And what we're talking about is a Texas-style abortion bill that has been proposed for Florida. We're going to go to your calls in a few moments on this. You can get on the line now at 305-995-1800. Here is another tweet, lots of tweets. Here's one from a listener. We should be calling this a forced birth bill. It is not about a heartbeat. We want to hear, though, from everyone on this incredibly emotional issue of abortion. 305-995-1800. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for supporting public media in your community. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. A Florida legislator has proposed a Texas-style abortion bill for the Sunshine State. It would essentially ban abortion in Florida if it passes. We're speaking with Courtney Cahill, professor at Florida State University College of Law. And you, Floridians, give us a call from wherever you are in the state. 305-995-1800. Charles in Jacksonville is with us. Hi, Charles. Thanks for holding through the break, and go right ahead.
Okay. Good morning, everybody. I think since the Republicans have such a stranglehold on the legislature, we have to show them the only thing they'll understand, and that's numbers. I'm calling on all the women of Florida and their allies. We need to put our pink hats back on and march on Tallahassee so they can see that we don't support this. Plus, it's a Breast Cancer Awareness Month, so I want to see a sea of pink out in Tallahassee. Thanks, y'all.
All right. You were referring to the historic Women's March after the election of President Trump. I apologize for the scatological reference from that caller, everyone. But yeah, Professor Cahill, you know, let's talk about the politics of this, because Florida has reasonable access to abortion, although there have been a few restrictions placed on the procedure in the last year or so. A bipartisan majority of Floridians supports women's right to an abortion. This will not cut well politically with even conservative female voters. What are your thoughts?
So I appreciate Charles's point. He's right, right? So 56%, according to a recent Pew Research poll, of Floridians support the right to choose. It's also important to note that in 1989, the Florida Supreme Court held in a parental consent case that the Florida Constitution's explicit privacy provision also protects the right to abortion. So not only, right, is this a kind of federal constitutional issue, it's also a state constitutional issue in Florida. I don't think that I don't think that will necessarily matter for the folks who want to pass this law in the Florida legislature. You know, we could kind of think about what's going on as emblematic of a kind of much larger phenomenon right now, and that is the tyranny of the minority, right? So where kind of minority voices are trumping.
Well, you could make the argument that that's been the case in Florida for a long time on a whole range of issues, frankly.
Right, right. So, you know, and you know, I mean, I don't think, you know, we shouldn't be thinking about what's going on with respect to abortion, either in the state of Florida or nationally, independent of voting rights and gerrymandering of districts, right, to favor perhaps a political minority, right? So I think all of these issues ought to be considered collectively and viewed under the same lens. So to the extent, you know, I just don't think that the fact that 56% of Floridians support the right to choose, I don't see that as, you know, I don't see that as being a kind of break on the Florida legislature. It hasn't, as you point out, it hasn't in the past with respect to other issues, other constitutional rights, nor do I think it will be in this case.
Professor Kahle, it's Tom Hudson. The path for this particular legislation can be twisty, obviously, just during the normal legislative process, and earlier referred to, of course, different court cases that are pending that could change the kind of language that winds up in any proposed legislation that legislators wind up voting on. And there's lots in this proposal. Certainly the headline is it's a Texas-style abortion regulation. But the proposal also changes the legal definition of an abortion in Florida. It replaces the word fetus in Florida law with the phrase unborn child. And then it goes on to define unborn child in the legislation as, quote, a human fetus. Is this legal semantics? Help us sort through the symbolism, but also the legal importance of this type of wordsmithing that's happening.
Yeah, so as for legal importance, it has none. So you can't just change the name in the existing abortion law in Florida from fetus to unborn child and expect that to be legally, you know, dispositive with respect to a constitutional analysis, right? So, you know, states are free under federal constitutional abortion law. States are free to express their view with respect to abortion, right? And with respect to whether or not they see developing fetus as, you know, a person, fetal personhood, right? So they can do that. And states, obviously, they've done that in their they've kind of put that fetal personhood language in their state constitutions. And they kind of just sit there, you know, probably waiting, you know, perhaps for Roe v. Wade to be reversed, right? So that those constitutional provisions become live. So I think that could partly be what's at play here, right? Like Florida is signaling in the event that the Supreme Court does overrule Roe v. Wade in the Mississippi case, right? They're signaling that this is our, right, that is our view, right? You know, to the extent that a reversal of Roe simply doesn't mean that abortion is illegal everywhere. It simply means that the issue is, quote unquote, returned to the states. Abortion has been in the states for quite some time.
Yeah.
Roe.
Professor, let me just interrupt you for a moment. Courtney Kahle, we're speaking with a professor at Florida State University College of Law, and we'll remind folks that you are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio.
We should note the U.S. House of Representatives is actually voting today on a bill protecting a person's access to abortion. The Women's Health Protection Act would protect the ability to continue or end a pregnancy, and it would enshrine healthcare providers' ability to offer services prior to fetal viability without restrictions imposed by the states. This bill is unlikely to advance, of course, in the U.S. Senate. 305-995-1800, Mark in Vieira, Florida. Mark, how are you? Go ahead.
Good. Good afternoon. Both DeSantis and Barnaby have been very adamant that it's a person's absolute right to determine what medical procedures they're subjected to in regards to the vaccine. I find it the height of hypocrisy that they don't extend that same right to women with this proposed law.
You know, we're getting tweets about that as well, Mark. Thanks for that. Tweets from listeners saying, so there must be choice on masks and vaccines, but no choice for women on abortion. Professor Cahill.
Yeah, so, you know, I think part of what's going on here is that the Supreme Court has made clear really from the very beginning that abortion was constitutionally protected, or at least shortly thereafter, that abortion is different, right? So it's you know, laws restricting abortion are violate the right to privacy. They're forms of bodily intrusion, right? I guess, you know, vaccine, similar to vaccines. They're similar to those sorts of infringements, but it's different because what also is weighed in the balance is the, you know, potential life. So I think, right, that is likely how folks who support this bill probably distinguish it from mandatory vaccines or mandatory mask wearing, right? Where you just have, you know, an individual right against bodily intrusions at stake in those contexts. Whereas in this context, according to supporters, there's another interest at play.
We've got time for one more caller. Southwest Ranches, Anna is on line 5. Go ahead, Anna. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thank you. And thanks, Senator Book, as well. I've been in Tallahassee exercising my right of assembly and attending various meetings and speaking. And we've never spent a lot of time together, but I definitely appreciate your consistency and your beliefs. So all that I wanted to say quickly is, personally, I do not support abortion. I don't believe in it. I've come to that belief experientially and honestly, and I end up upsetting both sides of the aisle on this because of what I'll say next. My mom had a choice when I was born almost 60 years ago, and the choice that she made, she had to, you know, because back then it was, do you want to save the baby, do you want to save you, and she chose me. We both lived, we both had some medical problems early on, but I think my mom and I were both pretty happy about that choice, which was hers to make. And I wished for a big family with my husband, and thankfully we were able to have one healthy child, but no more than that. So for my personal reasons, I personally don't support it. But secondly, I absolutely support a woman's right to an abortion. It is not my business, just like my decisions and my mom's decisions were very painful, very private. So too are women who wish to terminate a pregnancy. You look throughout history, there has always been attempts on the part of the patriarchy to control this one amazing power that only women have. And yet I don't see the same thing being done on the part of women trying to restrict the similar behavior resulting in our pregnancies on the part of men. And we need to just back away, whether we're talking about this or vaccines or how we treat each other or anything, and just try, whether it's prayerfully, meditatively, however you get there, to move to
Anna,
a place, yeah, of
acceptance. And I am riveted by what you're saying. But unfortunately, we have to say goodbye because we're up against the clock. And I want to thank Professor Cahill from FSU for your incredible legal insights as well on this contentious issue. Thanks, Professor.
Oh, thank you.
Tom, what an hour, and hearing people's unfiltered opinions on this. Thanks to everyone who called in. The Florida Roundup, produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville, WLRN Public Media in Miami. Heather Schatz and Katie Munoz are producers. Catherine Hobbs is our associate producer.
WLRN's Director of Radio Operations and our Technical Director is Peter Mertz. We get engineering help each and every week from Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, and Josh Torres. Richard Ives answers the phones. Our theme music is provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. Thanks for listening and supporting public radio. I'm Tom Hudson.
I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back next Friday at noon. Stay safe. Have a great weekend.